Ladies and gentlemen, it's Tuesday. Week one is in the books. Bill Belichick's team played last night. So did Sonny Dykes. TCU football social media went on an epic run last night. If you haven't had a chance to see that, you ought to go. Just peruse through there. Get yourself a chuckle over your lunch on this beautiful Tuesday. I'm Scott Russell. I got college football experts Zach Barnett, John Bryce, Doug Samuels. Gentlemen, it's all great to see you. So... I think the whole college football world's under contract. You have to talk about Bill Belichick a little bit. So let's talk Bill Belichick a little bit. What did we see last night? The floor is open, gentlemen.
I saw a team that for all the talk that we knew they would be shorthanded from a talent standpoint, I saw a team that had a number of other issues. I didn't think it was – only a talent thing. I thought they tackled very poorly. I thought effort at times was incredibly poor. And not surprisingly, as that game wore on, other than Max Johnson, I thought a lot of the body language was pretty tepid as well. So I loved Sonny Dykes saying, you know, there's a lot of talk about this game, but not a lot of talk about two teams. And you're right, I'm not sure which TCU Twitter moment was the best, but telling Deadspin to go back to sleep was pretty damn good.
I thought I agree with you. If I was going to pick out one thing, I'd say effort. You just –
right.
Like, guys, we trying to win this game or what? It was just not there after about the first quarter. It was over.
Go ahead, Doug. Go ahead, Doug.
The lesson I kind of took away was don't schedule – if you're a very hyped first-year head coach, don't schedule TCU. TCU opened with Deion Sanders 2022, put it on him. And then last night, absolutely put it on Bill Belichick. So if you're a hyped program with a first-year head coach, don't have TCU on your schedule to open things up. That was tough. UNC had every notable alumni in attendance. Michael Jordan was there, Lawrence Taylor, Mia Hamm, Roy Williams, Jay Pep, Randy Moss, not an alum, but a Bill Belichick disciple. Teddy Bruschi was there. Like it was like a who's who. It reminded you in a lot of ways of Prime's opening. Like it was a big ticket item. North Carolina had never given up 48 points in a season opener until last night, and Bill Belichick had never given up 48 points ever as a head coach until last night. So there was a lot of firsts, a lot of eye opening moments. I think it begs the question. I don't think the transfer portal and bringing in a bunch of kids flips a roster as fast as the media wants you to think. I think it's at least a 2-year process before Belichick brought in a lot. Roster hasn't been flipped. I mean, it's a coming to a conclusion after week one, which is never a good idea. Prime took a bunch, took 2 years to really flip things. And even then it was kind of underwhelming in a lot of ways. So I don't think the transfer portal is a quick fix as much as the college football media wants us to believe it is.
So we had youth football practice last night, so I didn't tune into the game till the second half. And I'm not joking at all. It was the most fascinating, most entertaining half of football I watched all weekend long. Like the first play is the 75-yard untouched touchdown run. Uh-huh. And then guarantee you TCU players and coaches like could not believe how easy it was. It was like they were like, I guarantee you they get tougher looks from their own scout team than they got from the North Carolina defense. Like it looked like they were playing on freshman mode on NCAA. Like they were just terrible run, untouched touchdown runs, automatic. Like Hoover was throwing like three straight hitch routes, just taking easy 6-7 yards because TCU was lined up in a conventional formation in North Carolina wasn't adjusting. So he was just like, all right, well, this is an automatic for us, so I'm just going to take it. It was like, obviously there was quit, there was a lack of talent, but there were FCS teams that put up tougher fights from a talent perspective and a schematic perspective than North Carolina did last night. And so as I'm sitting down and getting caught up at halftime, I'm scrolling through tweets. And apparently, obviously, ESPN put a lot into it, and North Carolina scored to open the game. And so I'm seeing tweets like, this is what North Carolina wanted when they hired Bill Belichick. And you've got the blimp or the drone of the full stadium, and it feels like it was the biggest game in college football last night. and full stadium and all that stuff. But then I'm reading those tweets as the stadium's emptying out and North Carolina's getting its bare bottom spanked. And I'm like, okay, so this is what North Carolina signed up for with the Bill Belichick experience. You're down by 30. The whole country's watching. Your fans are spilled out. And you're getting embarrassed in this game. And I'm so – I know we live in a society that values nothing more than short-term attention. But this is what North Carolina has asked for. And I root for a pro football team that's done nothing more than chase short-term attention for 30 years. So I'm sensitive to this, but like, yeah, you got a great first 10 minutes of the Bill Belichick era. What did the next 50 look like? What are the next 11 games going to look like? It was everything I thought it was going to be. And I was watching that second half, like expecting, even though I expected TCU to roll, I could not believe my eyes and I couldn't look away at that car crash last night.
So I love that. Even though you didn't tune in till the second half, you still beat North Carolina. and then I would just say that, Doug, you make a great point about the transfer portal. I also think it matters who you go get in the transfer portal. And while North Carolina has 70-plus new players on its roster, I didn't look at its transfer portal class and think, holy smokes, these guys went and got everybody they wanted to get from the transfer portal and look at
what they got 70 guys that were available for a reason.
Yes, exactly that. So I don't I'm not pro building a college program via the portal anyway. I'm much more supplement and build through high school recruiting. But I think that what North Carolina has done isn't necessarily an indictment of the transfer portal as much as it is an indictment of their roster.
You know, I've seen Lane Kiffin over the past couple of years just consistently be team building and team bonding, and he's constantly having fun with his players. He's creating relationships. He's creating buy-in. And to me, and he's done a great job with that, to me. And he's hit the portal pretty good, right?
Right.
But he brings them in and he assimilates, right? He says, all right, this is who we are as a team. And he might have to change who they are as a team. He might have to adapt that year to year based on his leadership, the leaders of the team. And I think Lane's done a great job with that. I think Bill believes, you know, schematically – hates to go Charlie Weiss on you. Schematically, he thinks he's got some things that he does pretty well. And I don't know that they have come together as a team. It was pretty cool to see Max Johnson last night. You know, you hate seeing Gio get hurt. I think Gio hopefully will be fine. But boy, Max came in and threw some dots. That was pretty cool.
Well, to your point, Scott, Lane Kiffin, and I mean, there's dozens and dozens of other college staffs and personnel, head coaches to personnel, that know what they're looking for in the portal. They could turn on film of any game at any level and pick out this guy can play winning football at an SEC program. I don't know that the North Carolina staff knows what it's looking for. I don't know that they know what ACC level winning football players look like. Like, they took guys, but they didn't take guys that can be good at the ACC level. And I also don't know in practice if they know what they're looking for, because obviously I didn't see Gia Lopez's first half. But I know that ESPN was throwing graphics that had been 2 hours in real time since North Carolina's last completed pass. And I know Max Johnson is a capable, good college quarterback. Like, he was in the game making big boy college throws. Like, I was watching that game thinking North Carolina came into this game starting their second best quarterback.
Scott, you mentioned Lane Kiffin, and I think the difference for me looking at both programs is that comes to mind is like transactional coaching versus transformational coaching. I think Lane Kiffin in his older years is very much transformational, you know, doing I think over the weekend he was doing yoga 3 hours before their kickoff, right? Whereas North Carolina and Bill Belichick right now are transactional. They're the NFL's 33rd team, right? Come here and go to the league and get developed by, like, that's transactional. And that's part of where college football has clearly headed with NIL and the portal. But there's still something to be said for transformational coaching, especially when you're taking in a ton of new players and have to build a new team every year.
Well, as I was completing my very natural Miami to Philadelphia to Chicago to South Bend travels yesterday, I had a college offensive coordinator call me about 5 o'clock yesterday afternoon, and he just said, "Bryce, I'm telling you, Steve Belichick doesn't know tempo. You don't see tempo in the NFL like you see from college offenses." And I hadn't thought about it that much because I'm not that smart. But then once he put that in my mind and then I watched the game, yeah, Steve Belichick got cooked. And yeah, North Carolina absolutely could not keep pace both with its style of play and I don't think from an execution standpoint with what TCU put on them. I think it will be key now how quickly and how much does this North Carolina coaching staff evolve for its players moving forward, because we can't put it all on the players, even if we think that they went and just got a so-so haul out of the transfer portal, because those coaches still went and got those players to bring them to North Carolina.
Well, John, how many guys on the staff? I mean, he's got – Bill has some established, like Will Friend, Garrick McGee, Bob Diaco. Those are guys that have – that are professional college football coaches that would work for – that could get jobs in a world where Bill Belichick is not a college football coach. Those guys would get jobs. But I'm also seeing a number of names on this list that would not be in the positions they're in if Bill Belichick was not the North Carolina head football coach.
Correct. And, you know, that was part of their approach from having Lombardi to GM to whatever. It was like, oh, we're going to bring in the NFL guys to coach, and then we're going to have this other ring of staffers who are going to be our recruiters and our guys that build the relationships. And, again, we're four quarters in, and which means we're just through 1/48 of the season or whatever, and it's a disaster right now. How quickly do they all adjust and evolve? And I'm with you. Like, maybe they have to have a mobile quarterback moving forward, and they know that much better than us. But Max Johnson, absolutely. I mean, he was facing a different TCU defense when he got in there, one that wasn't as dialed in. But he looked good, and he made throws that Gio did not make.
When Max, I don't know if y'all saw this, the one shot, he just took a full facial, went down. He got destroyed. He got up and threw a couple of completions right away. It looked like he was a little bloodied. I was like, dude, that kid is tough. I mean, obviously, coming back from what he came back from last year, geez, man, you root for that guy. Yeah. All right. One last note. I had the broadcast on, kind of caught this real fast. Maybe a left tackle, maybe a right tackle offensive for North Carolina. I think they said the kid is a true freshman. He's like 6'9", 325, 375. He's like, what? An absolute giant out there. Kid's a true freshman. I don't know if anybody picked up on that, but God bless America.
I did not see that, but that wasn't the only 6'9 lineman over the weekend, so I'm sure we'll get to that in just a moment.
Okay. All right. It wasn't my transition, but okay. So JB had the pleasure of going down to Miami to cover Notre Dame. It rained a lot. I told you about how hard it would be for a guy who has never thrown a pass in college football to lead his team to a national championship. I told y'all this was like a bold. This was wildly bold. Guy had never thrown a pass, and it showed. He battled. He had heart. He took some shots. CJ Carr did, but man, you know, Carson Beck did through some balls, and holy smokes, did his receivers deliver from Miami. Shannon Dawson's a good offensive football coach too. A lot of fun to watch. Jamie, give me some. What did you see on the ground there?
Yeah, I call that. Miami won that game from the headset down. I'm glad you bring up Shannon Dawson because he's been in the college game for a really long time. This was the return of Chris Ash to the collegiate game, and I thought that was a headset win for Miami. I'd gotten to spend a little time with Shannon Dawson this summer at a coach's symposium in Atlanta in June. That was the first time I'd really gotten to meet him and talk in person. That was pretty fascinating. But I thought, and we wrote this on the site, that Miami out-Notre-Dame'd Notre Dame. Like Miami – you think of speed and finesse. Miami absolutely bludgeoned Notre Dame at the line of scrimmage. And I bring up the 6'9 offensive lineman at North Carolina because Miami has a 6'9", 345-pound offensive lineman. And Miami's offensive line averages somewhere around 330 to 340 pounds. They've got Francis Mananoa, who may be the first offensive tackle selected in the 2026 NFL draft, a really, really sublime player. If you remember, he was coming out of high school same time as Nico Iamaliava, and one of those two career paths have taken wildly different trajectories. But I just thought, again, that Miami won that game in the trenches, and they held Notre Dame to under 100 yards rushing. They harassed Notre Dame all night, and they absolutely bullied Notre Dame's defensive line at the point of attack, and particularly Notre Dame's interior, which I'd said on a couple of different spots I thought was the team's most significant question mark going into the season. I still think that's a significant question mark, but I think the Notre Dame offensive line is much more of a question mark than maybe was let on or realized.
John, I'm curious, coming off the Ohio State-Texas game where Ohio State went out of their way to not put it all on Julian Sain, and it seemed like he was capable of more than Ohio State asked him to do. Arch Manning was not capable of doing what Texas asked him to do. Notre Dame asked C.J. Carr to throw 30 passes, and he also led Notre Dame in carries with 11. And obviously, not all those were designed runs, but I'm hoping you can explain how Jeremiah Love and Jadarian Price got 16 combined carries and Jaden Greathouse didn't touch the ball one time.
Well, I have one even better for you, Zach, and that is on Notre Dame's first 7 offensive possessions, Jeremiah Love had 5 total touches, which to me is just inexplicable and inexcusable. The guy is hands down, I think, the best running back in college football this year, and when he touches the ball, you have a chance. Now, post-game, I thought it was interesting. Marcus Freeman said, you know, CJ's got to stop reading those sometimes and just give the ball the 4. Well, like, CJ's also – making his first ever start in college and hasn't played a game in 2 years. So maybe the coaches do a better job of saying, CJ, give the ball to 4 more in the game rather than after the game. I thought, again, that was a headset loss for Notre Dame. I could not understand that. Unfortunately for the Irish, Jaden Greathouse did touch the ball once. It was on a quick flare screen that got blown up. 2 Notre Dame receivers, Greathouse and Jordan Faison, couldn't handle 1 Miami DB who deflected the ball up into the air. Reuben Bain snagged the interception, and that really proved ultimately the difference in the game. I don't think C.J. Carr was intended to necessarily throw it 30 times, but Notre Dame was down 21-7 in the second half and 24-14 as well. So 2 different double-digit deficits. Notre Dame had to go to the air much more, but again, Notre Dame also had to go to the air much more because its much ballyhooed offensive line got worked most of the evening. I mean, I thought, and being down there and talking with Miami people, I'd already shared this with Scott, like, people were like, Mario remade this team in his image. Like, he went out and invested in the offensive line, and it's just one game, but I don't remember Notre Dame not physically meeting a challenge under Marcus Freeman like that since maybe year 1. And, you know, even when they've lost, they've been a very physical team. They've met Texas A&M's physicality in College Station last year. They opened that national championship game with like a 13-play, 8-minute scoring drive that featured 2 fourth down conversions of Riley Leonard just bully balling it ahead at that great Ohio State defensive line and defense. So Notre Dame has always, I feel like, met the challenge of physicality under Marcus Freeman. It's what people in South Bend will say is a hallmark difference in the program from Brian Kelly to Marcus Freeman. I don't think Notre Dame came close to meeting the challenge. As a matter of fact, I asked Marcus Freeman point blank after the game. I said, you talk repeatedly about this being an O-line and D-line driven program. Do you feel your team met that standard or met the physicality of Miami tonight, particularly the first 30 minutes of the game? He said, we played hard, they played harder longer.
I think the O-line deserves their flowers, no question. But to have a guy like Carson Beck, who's got a ton of experience under his belt, he was probably got the most hate or most shade thrown at him this offseason than perhaps any transfer portal quarterback. You can blame the NIL price tag that came with him or whatever, but for him to get through his progressions, hit checkdowns, neutralize the Notre Dame pass rush, he deserves a ton of credit along with the offensive line, because you know, he got his name dragged through the mud for a lot of the offseason, and he showed up and showed that he was worth the price tag that the U paid him.
Your 28th career start for Carson Beck, and Scott opened this segment talking about how nasty it was, and it was a gross, rainy, marshy, swampy mess down there. Carson Beck's jersey was damn near as clean when the game ended as it was when the game started.
So Notre Dame, there was one voice on this podcast that wasn't a bold prediction. This was just straight facts. One voice said that Notre Dame was more likely to start 0-2 than hit their over of 10.5. They're now 0-1. They get a week off. They come home to Texas A&M. Here's their schedule after that. Purdue at Arkansas, Boise State, NC State, USC, at Boston College, Navy, at Pitt, Syracuse, at Stanford. A lot of winnable games following the Aggies, but not a lot of impressive names there. Like USC might find their way into the top 25. Navy?
Yeah, Navy won 10 games a year ago. I really like what they're doing, especially now with Drew Kronick running that offense, one of the more unique offenses in college football. Boise's obviously got to find its footing. But yeah, you're right. I mean, 2 weeks to prepare for Texas A&M, and for the fifth consecutive year, this is what I think is most telling. For the fifth consecutive year, Notre Dame has suffered its first loss of the season less than a month into the season. And so you're just putting yourself at such a disadvantage and placing so much pressure on yourself when you have a loss that early in the season, year after year after year.
But go ahead, Doug.
Last year under Marcus Freeman, they had an early season loss, and that pressure almost made diamonds. So I don't part of that's it's par for the course at this time in South Bend.
Yeah, I don't think Notre Dame has anything to be ashamed of at all. Like they didn't play their best game, but they played an admirable game in tough conditions. But just due to the way their schedule falls out, it's like you better beat A&M or you're truly up against it.
But if you get right and you beat A&M and you beat Purdue and you kind of get on a roll, like this is what Notre Dame does. You play a grown man's schedule, and that's okay. I thought 24 didn't play very much for Notre Dame, but when he did, that kid was fast.
Yeah, he got benched. He got benched after he sparked them on what became their first scoring drive, but he fumbled it on first and goal at the 3. And as soon as that happened – and if C.J. Carr doesn't alertly dive on the ball at the 6, then Notre Dame might get completely run in that game. But once he fumbled it, Jadarian Price went to the pine for quite a while. It was very reminiscent of the Louisville game last year where he had a great spark for the team and then fumbled it inside the 10-yard line. And so he's super talented, running back out of Texas. He's done some great things for them. Ball security is a slight bugaboo with him.
Most of the game, I felt Notre Dame's defensive line got pushed up the middle when Miami needed 2 yards. I think it's 40 and 41. I think in the fourth quarter, those two dudes stepped up. They went in down low, and they bucked up a little bit, and they held. I think Notre Dame's got some stuff to work with. You know, they played against a very good quarterback. The receivers made some exceptional catches that, you know, changed the game a little bit. The turnover, like you talked about, when on the wide receiver screen, flip kicked up in the air, and that was, you know, that happens. Staying bold, boys.
How about C.J. Daniels with that catch? Unbelievable, where Don Shuler thinks he's got a pick. C.J. Daniels didn't have a touchdown catch last year at LSU. Opens the season with probably the second-best catch of the entire weekend, along with the Florida kid.
Oh, man, what game was it where the kid caught the ball back here?
That was Florida, I believe.
No, it wasn't Florida. I didn't see Florida. Shoot, it'll come back to me. It's just an exceptional catch. Gosh, was it a kid from Notre Dame? I think it was a kid from Notre Dame. Maybe 8? Or 0?
0. Malachi Fields had a nice catch.
It was him. He caught the edge of the ball. You don't remember that? Down the right sideline?
Yeah. I mean, I knew he blocked. He boxed it out. The Florida catch is better. Florida catch is better.
I didn't see the Florida catch. Let's pick that up. All right, gentlemen, I hate to break this to you, but there is no football on tonight or tomorrow night. Damn shame.
It won't be the seventh grade football at McAnally Middle School.
There we go.
Let's go.
Live stream, of course. Live stream, Zach. FaceTime me.
Always a pleasure, gentlemen. Great times. Football Scoop Podcast is fantastic. We love doing this. I love interacting with fans. I thoroughly enjoy the text from coaches and from friends who listen to this and just say, hey, we love this. Give JB some crap about his hats, whatever. Yeah. Not bad. Masters. Good stuff. Gentlemen, always a pleasure. Everybody have a great week. We'll talk soon.